It is Monday, May the 9th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Thanks for joining us. Coming up, North Korea's leader vows no nuclear actions under certain circumstances.
They never needed nuclear weapons to deter U.S. attacks. We just weren't inclined to attack them. We didn't see that there was any real utility to it.
Also ahead, the British government resettling unaccompanied child refugees, choosing a new leader in the Philippines, plus the massive forest fires in Canada. Hello everyone, I'm Steve Norman. North Korea's state news agency says President Kim Jong-un has told a ruling party Congress his country will not use nuclear weapons unless its sovereignty is threatened by other nuclear powers. VOA's Victor Beatty asked RAND Corporation Korea scholar Bruce Bennett for his thoughts on the sovereignty concept.
Well, the whole sovereignty infringed thing, one has to go back to the beginning of the Korean War. Who started it? We all know North Korea started the Korean War, but they claim we started it. So how reliable a source are they to say when it is their sovereignty is threatened, especially since I think they pretty regularly argue that the U.S. is preparing to threaten their sovereignty all the time, and that we're just all ready to attack them to get their people to put into the sacrifices that they want them to put in. So these are not reliable commitments by North Korea, where they can tell the big lie and where they have a very different perception of things from what we do.
No surprise that they will strengthen their self-defensive nuclear weapons capability.
Well, from a North Korean perspective, you've got to ask, did they need nuclear weapons to deter U.S. attacks from 1953 through the current period of time? The answer is they never needed nuclear weapons to deter U.S. attacks. We just weren't inclined to attack them. We didn't see that there was any real utility to it. So how much do they need nuclear weapons if conventional weapons used to handle the problem just fine? And the answer is probably not any, but certainly not more than a few. And if they have more than a few, they're not purely defensive. They're starting to field an offensive capability. And that's bad news for North Korea because they may eventually push the U.S. to do something about it.
In his speech that was broadcast on Sunday, Kim Jong-un vowed that Pyongyang would faithfully fulfill its non-proliferation obligations and push for global denuclearization. Even as you well know, North Korea withdrew from the non-proliferation treaty back in 2003. Are these empty words in your view?
Oh, certainly. They had committed previously not to field nuclear weapons, and yet they did. But moreover, when they've been doing nuclear tests, they've invited Iranian scientists to be with them, as I understand it, for every test. They're already sharing nuclear information with other countries. They helped Syria to build a nuclear plant. I mean, so these are empty commitments. These are commitments North Korea is breaking on a regular basis.
He's also said he's prepared to reach out to so-called hostile countries, including South Korea, to possibly engage in ways to ease tensions on the peninsula.
Well, I think he would like to ease tensions to the point of even a peace treaty that he's been demanding that the U.S. cut with him, because he'd like to adjust the situation to one where there's no longer a strong reason for U.S. troops on the peninsula. We withdraw our troops, and then he feels like he could probably invade South Korea and might have a chance with his weapons of mass destruction.
He also outlined a new 5-year economic plan focusing on mechanizing of agriculture, automating factories, higher coal output. Are these lofty goals?
Well, they're certainly lofty goals, both in the context of the sanctions which are being applied to him, but also in the sense that, North Korea, he's had 4 years and he's progressing at what? Maybe a 1% a year GDP? They don't know how to achieve the kind of objectives they're talking about. And if they're going to sink major money into nuclear programs, you can't do both at the same time. You've got to decide one way or the other, given their small ability to progress.
He's taking ownership of the economy. Is that a surprising move in your view?
Well, but in North Korea, the regime has always had ownership of the economy. Now, is he taking ownership in terms of trying to make it better? Certainly. But I think both his father and his grandfather wanted to make it better, too. And his grandfather was pretty successful at it. But Kim Jong-un has not been successful, and his father really wasn't very successful at it either. So, yeah, they're going to say they're going to push forward the civilian economy. I'm not sure they're going to go very far other than in Pyongyang.
Is there anything in the speech that Kim Jong-un delivered on Sunday that would ease the concerns of South Korea or its allies, U.S. and Japan?
No, it seems to me to be just more of the same old from North Korea, of these arguments that they are going to do good when in fact they do bad. So I don't think there's anything there that's going to ease concerns.
RAND Corporation Korea scholar Bruce Bennett speaking with VOA's Victor Beatty. Our social media expert, G. Abby Lee, is here with word on the media coverage of the Party Congress in Pyongyang. Hey, G., what you got?
Steve, as you know, many reporters were in the country's capital over the weekend to cover the ruling Workers' Party Congress. And what I see online is that some of them are very candid about their impression of what's going on in Pyongyang. They include Anna Fifield from Washington Post and James Pearson from Reuters.
Any examples, G, of what they're saying about all of this?
For example, Fifield used Periscope and Facebook Live to live stream from Pyongyang, and in one of the sessions, she even said her minders are not aware of the activity because they don't have the access to these accounts. But keep in mind, her room is likely bugged, and there are hidden cameras throughout the hotel. So I really hope everyone gets to leave North Korea safe and sound. When I was in North Korea several years ago, I was much more cautious, but it was a more rigid system back then as well. Back to you, Steve.
And many thanks, UG, VOA social media guru G. Abby Lee. You can find her on Twitter at G. Abby Lee. International Edition is there as well. Look for us at VOA_IE. G. will be back later in the program to talk about the U.S. presidential race. And among the world's top stories we're covering, Turkey's leader criticizing the West for leaving them to battle the Islamic State militants. Tight security for Lebanon's election, plus electing a U.S. president. Expanded coverage of those stories and a lot more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. Philippine President Benigno Aquino is appealing for a peaceful, orderly vote as millions head to the polls today to choose his successor. Polling going into the voting show the tough-talking mayor of Davao, Rodrigo Duterte, as the surprise favorite. He's known for his profanity-filled speeches against the government and his threats to murder criminals. Duterte has also been compared to Donald Trump, who is the presumptive U.S. Republican Party nominee for president, and his unconventional campaign style. We asked East-West Center senior fellow Gerard Finnan for his thoughts on Duterte's popularity. He answers by referencing the years in power of longtime Philippine president-turned-dictator Ferdinand Marcos, who was ousted, you might remember, from office in 1986.
I think in the larger context, many positive things have happened since Marcos fled the Philippines in 1986 in the face of the so-called people power revolution. So rule of law and human rights have improved, the economy has been growing, and the Philippine military has once again accepted the principle of civilian rule. What people seem to, in some cases, be dissatisfied with is the pace and direction of change in the Philippines. So the fundamental economic structure of the country that favors elites has not changed. Neither has there been the kind of improvement in infrastructure which affects people on a day-to-day basis. So things like water systems, transport systems continue to be strained, especially in the face of a growing population. Since the ouster of Marcos, there have been some very honest and competent national leaders, including Cory Aquino, Fidel Ramos, and the current president. However, there are many people who don't remember Marcos or the terrible economic and social and political conditions, which were really a direct consequence of the martial law regime that he led.
Gerard Finnan is an expert on the Philippines. He is also a senior fellow at the East-West Center in Hawaii.
News happens around the clock, and VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palca.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock on The Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA, a leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
Take your pick. Watch on television, log on to the internet, or listen right here on the radio. Hello, I am Shaka Sali, the host of Straight Talk Africa from The Voice of America. Each Wednesday night, I'll put you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they, you and I, talk about the most important social and political issues in Africa. Shaka Sali saying, I'll be waiting for your call Wednesday night on Straight Talk Africa from The Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. After criticism from lawmakers across the political spectrum, the British government has signaled that it will accept thousands of unaccompanied Syrian child refugees who have fled to Europe. Henry Ridgewell following a story from London.
In the months before the outbreak of World War II, Nazi persecution of the Jews was intensifying. As Jewish families fled their homes, Britain took in nearly 10,000 unaccompanied children from across Europe, an operation known as Kinder Transport. Eric Rice was one of those children. He was 4 years old when his parents sent him and his two older brothers to safety in an unknown land.
And I must say that the fact that my parents allowed three boys aged 11, 10 and 4 to go is beyond me. I could never have done it, but they did. And the fact is that I'm still here 81 years later. Not bad, huh?
Rice would never see his parents again. Records show his father was sent to the concentration camp at Auschwitz. His mother's fate is unknown. Rice was resettled with a German refugee family near London.
I was given a life. The couple that took me on, non-Jewish, they allowed me to have my education, they looked after me, and in a way they saved me, because at the age of 4 or 5, if you don't have somebody who loves you, you're in trouble.
Now Rice is leading a campaign for Britain to take in thousands of unaccompanied Syrian refugee children from across Europe.
They are trafficking. They are being taught to go and do prostitution. They're drugging. You know, there are all kinds of things that are happening because they're not looked after. There are unaccompanied children, the same as we were.
EU officials say 10,000 lone refugee children have disappeared in recent years. The British government initially refused to take in any additional refugee children, arguing that it could prompt thousands more to make the dangerous journey to Europe. But it signalled a change of policy, although exact numbers have yet to be worked out. Henry Ridgewell, VOA News, London.
Massive forest fire continues to rage through a community in Canada's Alberta province. The blaze has forced the evacuation of the city of Fort McMurray. Canadian broadcasting reporter Cameron McIntosh spoke with VOA from just outside Fort McMurray about the scope of the fires.
They were estimating that it would be over 300,000 hectares, and that is huge. We're talking a surface area here. Take New York and Los Angeles, put them together. This is still bigger than that. So this is a huge area. Now, the fortunate thing, the area around Fort McMurray itself is pretty sparsely populated. The city of Fort McMurray is about 88,000 people, but besides that, it's mostly boreal forest, a little bit of farmland, mining operations around here. There is concern that at least one of those oil sands plants could be in danger. However, many of these facilities have been built with fire in mind, so they're basically built in clear-cut areas, so it's hard for forest fire to reach them.
Despite firefighters' efforts, the blaze in Alberta's oil sands region will not go out until there's significant rain. Some has been forecast, but still a lot of rain is needed. Province is home to one of the world's most lucrative oil industries. Turning now to U.S. politics, where Donald Trump, the presumptive Republican Party presidential nominee, is sharpening his attacks on his likely rival in the November election, Hillary Clinton. During a campaign stop in the Pacific Coast state of Washington, Trump unleashed some personal attacks on Clinton and her husband, former President Bill Clinton.
She's married to a man who was the worst abuser of women in the history of politics. She's married to a man who hurt many women. And Hillary, if you look and you study, Hillary hurt many women, the women that he abused. She's married to a man who got impeached for lying. He was impeached, and he had to go through a whole big process, and it wasn't easy. He was impeached for lying about what happened with a woman. And she's going to take ads about little Donald Trump? I don't know. I don't think so.
Trump's verbal assault on Clinton is arguably his most intense so far. As for Hillary Clinton, she seems to be taking a more subtle approach to mocking Trump.
When I think about what's at stake, even if I weren't running for president, I would be doing everything I could to make sure that the presumptive nominee of the Republican Party never gets near the White House.
Clinton's swipe at Trump seems to go over well with supporters, but as the general election nears and the battle to win intensifies, observers are already saying she'll have to turn in the heat on Trump, who has shown he is ready for a nasty fight to become the next U.S. president. Now let's take a look at how U.S. lawmakers who are returning this week from a break might feel about what's happening in the presidential race. My colleague Jim Stevenson spoke with VOA's Senate correspondent Michael Bowman.
They will be returning with Republicans having a very good idea who will be representing them at the top of the ticket as their presidential nominee for the rest of the year and into the fall. That is Donald Trump. And many lawmakers that I'd spoken to sort of had an inkling that this was likely, but they will be getting back to work with that, in fact, confirmed. And it should be an interesting time to be a reporter on Capitol Hill.
Well, from the Speaker of the House on down, there is lukewarm support for Donald Trump within the ranks. Speaker Ryan saying that he just couldn't come out and support Trump at this time. But it leaves the door open for, obviously, a future endorsement.
Right. And we are, in fact, expecting that Donald Trump might be on Capitol Hill this week, perhaps Thursday, to speak with House Republicans and perhaps to have a side meeting with Speaker Paul Ryan off at the Republican headquarters here in Washington, D.C. Ryan is not ruling out throwing his support behind Donald Trump, but he wants to sort of feel him out on some things and see if, in fact, Trump merits that support. Donald seems to be somewhat peeved with this turn of events and has suggested that, well, either he will or he won't, and if he doesn't, maybe I don't need him anyway. I don't think that he's quite said it in those terms, but that's sort of the message that he's tried to convey. On the Senate side, there are a number of Republicans who have been sort of on the fence, but a number who have said all along that they intend to support the Republican nominee, whoever that might be. It's going to be an interesting week to be up there and to feel out some of the members who have yet to stake out a position, just how they handle this. There are a number who are up for re-election, and Donald Trump could very well be a complicating factor in their re-election bid.
And that may very well be the root of a lot of this discontent, is the fact that there are a lot of members of Congress up for re-election in this cycle. For the time being, Donald Trump has probably the shortest coattails of any presidential nominee we've ever seen.
What Republicans fear is that he may have negative coattails.
Yes.
That he could drive up the anti-Trump vote to such an extent that they just vote against Republicans all up and down the ballot, and that it could be something of a bloodbath. Now, no one knows for sure whether that will happen. And in fact, Donald Trump points out with some legitimacy here that he has brought millions of voters into the Republican fold to vote for him. The question is whether in November that those new voters that he has brought in will be outweighed by many millions and millions more who could show up to vote against him. And that's what we just don't know. So I have no idea how it'll play out, but it sure is going to be interesting to watch.
That's a fact. Michael Bowman, the VOA Senate correspondent, he was speaking with International Edition's Jim Stevenson. And as I promised earlier, our social media expert, G. Abby Lee, is back with what's a buzz online about U.S. politics, specifically Donald Trump, who's always making news, as we've heard. Hey, G., what's Trump in hot water for now?
Hi, Steve. For something he said over the weekend, we talked about Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren's statement on him Tuesday, and he reacted to that statement on Friday. He called her names and questioned her Native American heritage. On Facebook, he wrote, "Goofy Elizabeth Warren, Hillary Clinton's flunky, has a career that is totally based on a lie. She's not Native American." He ended the post by adding, "I say she is a fraud." To that post, some of his supporters expressed their frustration with what they perceive as the Republican Party's lack of support for Trump. And meanwhile, people who are not fond of him asked whether he has insults past a third grade reading level.
Just curious, did she have a comeback?
You bet she did. She tweeted, "Goofy, for a guy with the quote-unquote best words, that's a pretty lame nickname. Weak." More than 13,000 people liked it. She also wrote, "I called out Donald Trump on Tuesday. 45 million people saw it. He's so confident about his counterpunch, he waited until Friday night. Lame." Back to you, Steve.
And many thanks to you, G., our own social media guru, G. Abby Lee. As I mentioned earlier, I'll tell you again, you can find G. on Twitter at G. Abby Lee. I'm there as well at VOA Norman, and you can follow International Edition on Twitter at VOA underscore IE. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
A group of astronomers have been able to determine the precise mass of a distant black hole in the center of an enormous elliptical galaxy 73 million light years away. The galaxy is called NGC 1332 and is located in the direction of the southern constellation Eridanus. To measure the exact mass of the black hole, the scientists said that they had to accurately gauge the orbital speed of the cold, dense clouds of interstellar gas and dust that circles the supermassive black hole. Since this orbiting cloud does not produce visible light, but does shine at other wavelengths, the researchers made their observations with the Atacama Large Millimeter Submillimeter Array, or ALMA, radio telescope in Chile. Data from the ALMA observations of the orbiting gas cloud allowed the astronomers to calculate that the black hole's mass is 660 million times greater than that of the sun. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is VOA's International Edition. Good to have you with us today. A new movie, Miracles from Heaven, starring Jennifer Garner, tells the story of a young girl with a debilitating illness who was cured when she fell from a tree. International Edition's David Byrd has our report.
Christy Beam never wanted to be an author, especially with the story she had to tell. But her memoir, Miracles from Heaven, tells Christy's story of how she faced the painful sickness of her daughter Annabelle and how it was cured. Annabelle had pseudo-obstruction motility disorder, where the muscles in the intestines required to move the food misfire. People with the condition cannot adequately digest their food, often have to take several medications a day, and suffer from unending pain.
Mommy! I'm coming! Mommy, it hurts!
Oh, no, baby! When Anna got sick, I just couldn't understand it. Why was this loving little girl going through this?
I think your daughter is lactose intolerant, acid reflux.
Everything looks okay.
Everything's fine.
Everything is not fine. There's something wrong with our little girl.
Mrs. B, you need to calm down.
I'm not leaving this hospital until I know what's wrong with my daughter!
All that changed on December 30th, 2011, when Annabelle fell 10 meters and was trapped inside a tree trunk. Once she was rescued, all Annabelle had was a slight concussion. She was taken to the hospital, but suffered no ill effects of the fall. It was on the drive home from a night stay in the hospital where Annabelle told her mother of a trip to heaven. The young girl told of sitting on Jesus' lap and being told that she couldn't stay in heaven because there was work for her to do on earth. She was also told that when she got out of the tree, there would be nothing wrong with her. Over the next several months, Christy Beam says her daughter did not need her medicine as much and was eating and digesting her food normally. Gradually, and under her doctor's care, Annabelle was weaned from her medications until finally her disease was gone. Christy Beam's faith plays a big role in this film. Jennifer Garner, who plays Christy in the adaptation of the book by the same name, says that she was originally skeptical of the story until she met Christy and Annabelle.
Maybe I had a moment of cynicism about the story, but not once I met Christy, and certainly not once I met Annabelle. They're pretty special, and they're pretty frank, and I would believe anything Christy told me right at face value, and Annabelle, I wouldn't even ask her. She's a gem of a girl.
Garner, who last year went through a very public breakup with her ex-husband Ben Affleck, says that making miracles from heaven helped revive her own faith, something that she had let drift into the background.
This movie did bring faith back into the conversation in my life and did make me realize that my kids weren't going to get it just by osmosis, because my parents had given this to me, that I actually had to be intentional and to participate in it. I think I'd been lazy about it. So I got off my duff and we had a conversation and found a church that we liked and where we've been totally embraced and have been really happy.
Miracles from Heaven also stars Kylie Rogers as Annabelle Beam. Martin Henderson plays Christy's husband, Kevin Beam. Queen Latifah stars as Angela, a waitress who helps encourage the family on a hospital visit to Boston. Eugenio Derbez plays Dr. Samuel Nurko, who helps diagnose Annabelle's disease and oversees her care after she is cured. It is rated PG and distributed by Sony Pictures. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
And it's a very nice movie. You should check it out if you get a chance. Listen, thanks, everyone, for joining us here on The Voice of America for International Edition. It's always good to have you dropping by. The latest world news is coming up shortly. Hope you'll stay tuned. For our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Zainab Abdul-Rahman, I'm Steve Norman in Washington. Have a great Monday.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In Angola, the three most important human rights abuses during 2015 were cruel, excessive, and degrading punishment, including reported cases of torture and beatings, limits on freedoms of assembly, association, speech, and press, and official corruption and impunity. That is the finding of the U.S. Department of State's country reports on human rights practices for 2015, released in April. The report is released annually on human rights practices around the world. The report for Angola also discussed other human rights abuses, including arbitrary or unlawful deprivation of life, harsh and potentially life-threatening prison conditions, arbitrary arrest and detention, lengthy pretrial detention, impunity for human rights abusers, lack of due process and judicial inefficiency, forced evictions without compensation, restrictions on non-governmental organizations, trafficking in persons, limits on workers' rights, and forced labor. The Angolan government took some steps to prosecute or punish officials who committed abuses. However, accountability was weak due to a lack of checks and balances, lack of institutional capacity, a culture of impunity, and widespread government corruption. But recent events continue to cause concern for human rights in Angola. The United States publicly expressed concern over the harsh sentences an Angolan court handed down in March to 17 civil society activists, noting that their conviction threatens the exercise of the freedoms of expression and peaceful assembly in Angola. Their sentences range from 2 years to 8.5 years in prison. The activists, known as the 15 Plus, were arrested last June, reportedly after a peaceful political discussion about democracy and governance. Two other activists were later charged with crimes. The 15 Plus 2 were eventually convicted in March of preparatory acts of rebellion and criminal conspiracy. Secretary of State John Kerry said the annual human rights report renews the U.S. commitment to promoting and protecting universal human rights, to supporting and defending civil society in its peaceful efforts to hold governments accountable, and to working with our partners to advance peace, development, human rights, and democracy.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email,
visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.
It's 4 hours.